This is Phil Ferrand, and I am driving home. It is episode 99. Pretty interesting. That's 99 episodes. We are going to be up to 104, i.e. 2 years before you know it. I'm going to have to see what we are going to do. Maybe I will talk to my son-in-law and see if he would like to do another episode with me. That was fun having him along for a ride last year at this time. So anyways, it's been a good week. It is Thursday today. I'm headed home. I'm going to do some more work on my little Windows 7 application. It's very interesting. No matter what you do in life, there are complicated details. So, but, you know, you take it one step at a time. I mean, the flesh is always there telling you, oh, it's too hard, just give up, quit, you know, but you just keep taking it one step at a time and learn what you can learn, do the best you can do, go from there. If I had done this podcast yesterday, I would be saying that I was really struggling with something, but I had a little breakthrough last night, and I think I know how to get that fixed. Tonight we're going to try to get that fixed, so that's all going well. I'm having fun in the mornings recording a little short 2 minute, minute and a half thing for my granddaughter, Clara, called Good Morning Clara, and I'm just recounting some things that have happened to me in the past, growing up in the Philippines, like that, like that, like that. And that's been fun to do that. I'm uploading them to YouTube, so someday she'll have them if she wants to watch them, fine. If she doesn't, fine. We were had Sunday dinner at our house this last Sunday. We try to get together at least 3 weeks out of the month and get both sets of great-grandparents and then my wife and I and my daughter and son-in-law and Clara together, and we have a meal together. It's very nice. And Clara was just smiling and smiling and smiling, and of course everyone just loves Aunt Clara, so she is going to be loved. I was thinking in the process of doing these demos, doing these little Good Morning Clara episodes, at some point I'm going to talk to her about what it was like just functionally to grow up in the Philippines. Because it's very interesting when you are a white person growing up in a third world nation. Because pretty much everywhere you go, somebody's looking at you. I mean, it's not as bad as the paparazzi and those types of things, but definitely when you walk into a room, you are noticed because you're an American. And people understand that everyone lives well in America, and according to the standard of living that they have, you are wealthy, 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 wealthy. And so you can't really hide the fact that you're an American and are probably more well off than most of the people in the room. Unless, of course, you go visit the Chinese in the Philippines, then you're not even close. But for the most part, when you walk around, people look at you and they know that if you're in the Philippines and you're there, that you have far more money than they do. Thankfully, the Filipinos are very kind and generous individuals. Typically, there's no problem. At least when I was there, there was no problem. But it makes for an interesting way to grow up, because it means that as you're walking around, most of the people you are encountering are looking at you and wishing that they were you. So it's different, and I'm sure it shaped my view of the world. And thinking about Clara and how she has so much love around her at this point, and that will probably continue, because as long as Liz and Alan are in the ministry, Clara will be kind of center stage, and she will have plenty of people wanting to know her. It really does influence how you view life. And it can be a bad thing, but a lot of time it's a good thing, because people aren't necessarily kicking you all the time. Anyways, I've just been thinking about this last week. It's interesting. This week was actually a pretty momentous week in terms of computer science. And I think this week is going to have a stake in the ground, and it's going to have a little marker on it whenever we review advances in computer science. I don't know if you heard about Watson. You probably did, but just in case you didn't, for past many years, spending millions of dollars, IBM has had a team whose goal was to create a computer that could compete at the very top level with humans in Jeopardy, the game Jeopardy, which I'm sure most everyone listening to this knows what the game of Jeopardy is, but the game of Jeopardy features answers, and the contestants have to phrase it in the form of a question when they reply, when they attempt to win the points that are indicated by the answer. It's obviously a game show that's been on for many, many years, well-respected game show. It deals with a wide variety of knowledge, and it typically has clues that are meant to be opaque. Some of them are just factual clues, but most of the time, even the factual clues just have fragments of information. Sometimes the clues are puns, and sometimes you have to make the leap between the title of the category and the questions themselves. They may have a category of on the keyboard, which means that all the answers are keys on the keyboard. And then the clues will take whatever the keys are on the keyboard and give, like, their primary definition, home. So you have to, first of all, figure out what the primary definition is that they're hinting at, and then you have to figure out what key that maps to on the keyboard. Not a trivial task when you're talking about getting computers to do it. But over many years and over millions of dollars, utilizing some significant processing power, they actually were able to accomplish this. It's fascinating, very interesting. And on February the 14th, 15th, and 16th, Jeopardy relocated to IBM, where they had set up a studio. They brought in Ken Jennings, who was the guy who had a 70-something, 72, 74 game winning streak. They brought in another guy who had won a lot of money on Jeopardy. Both really, I hesitate to use the word intelligent. They are intelligent men, but they are men who are possessed of a great storehouse of knowledge and are able to make interconnections between the data very quickly. And they pitted these two guys against Watson, which was the name of this computer, or really this computer network. And it was really fascinating. They did some background stuff where they kind of showed what Watson really is. And he filled the computer complex, filled the entire room. And they said it was 10 IBM something or others, which was the equivalent of like 2,800 personal computers. Huge computing array. I think they said it had something like 13 terabytes of storage. They had fed it all of this knowledge, had allowed it to make interconnections through a process called machine learning. And there was actually a program on Nova that recounted some of the steps leading up to the place when finally the Jeopardy producer said, yeah, okay, we'll let you compete, let's do it. And it was very, very interesting to me, and really quite an accomplishment. It was interesting to see the reaction of some bloggers after the first day. After the first day, Watson had like $5,000, Ken Jennings had like $5,000, and the other guy, I can't remember his name, had a thousand or 2,000. So there wasn't much distance between them at that point. And some of the bloggers were just going off on Watson. Watson proves to be a bust, blah, blah, blah. I mean, just really going off on, well, this is ridiculous. This can't, you know. And really mocking the fact that sometimes Watson would get questions completely wrong. Because they would show down at the bottom of the screen what Watson thought the answers were, and which one it then picked. Please don't be offended by the anthropomorphizing. I call things he and she all the time with my computer programs. So it was really interesting to see what Watson was coming up with, because Watson doesn't necessarily comprehend the answer or the question. Watson just uses this amazing array of pattern matching and parsing, and then just whatever floats to the top, if it makes it above a certain certainty level, you know, he tries to ring in. And so you would look at the answers to the questions, and there seemed to be some that were just bizarre and not connected to anything. But somewhere in his vast storehouse of knowledge, he had connections to those things and, you know, thought that that was an appropriate response. So at the end of the first day, I think as some technical writers and bloggers were seeing this, there was a reaction of, oh, I can't believe it, blah, 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 you know, this thing's a bust, it doesn't work right. I watched it the first day, and I thought it was amazing, because I had some inkling of what was involved underneath, and I was just thinking, wow, this is really impressive. I didn't get a chance to see it the second day. Because I had it set to record, and then for some reason it didn't record. I did record it the third and final day, and I read about the second day that Watson had kind of pulled out in front at that point. Had racked up like $35,000. at the end of the first game. I mean, basically just started cleaning the humans' clocks. Because if it was a question that had anything to do with pure factual information, you just can't compete with that. The only times the humans had any chance at all is if they could somehow manage to ring in before Watson, or if it was something that relied on some kind of tangential mental connection to get to the data. And there in the last day, Ken Jennings kind of got back on his feet and was able to at least maintain a reasonable gap between him and Watson. At the end of it all, you know, Watson, of course, won because it had massed up so much money on the second day. But it was very interesting because Ken Jennings made a strategic move at the end that instead of betting big and possibly beating Watson on the second day, but certainly with no chance to beat him overall, he bet small to ensure that he would come in second place, which was an interesting strategy. But considering that the first place winner was going to get $1 million, and there was no chance that he could win that, and the second place winner was going to get $300,000, and the third place winner was going to get $200,000, you know, there's a $100,000 swing there. I probably would have done the same thing. I'd just go conservative and just maintain my number two spot. IBM did donate all the money to charity, and both of the human competitors said that whatever they won, they would donate half to charity. So, you know, the human competitors, for 3 days' worth of work, made $100,000 and $150,000 respectively. That's not too bad for 3 days' worth of work, even if they got trounced by a computer. Okay, so what do we observe through all this, now that I've kind of given you a setup? I first of all was fascinated to see the reaction of bloggers when Watson wasn't doing that well. That they really wanted Watson to be able to work well. And I thought that was kind of an interesting reaction. And what's fascinating to me about computer technology and computer intelligence and those sorts of things is that, to me, it represents somewhat of a conundrum to the designers and to the consumers of that technology. If they are atheists. Because it's not like IBM was just wandering through a field and kicked over a rock and noticed there was something there, and they dug it out of the ground and they discovered this box that could magically answer questions. Watson didn't just happen. Watson was the result of concerted, continuous design. And Watson's intelligence, and I use that word in quotes, was absolutely the result of very focused mental efforts. So it doesn't bother me at all that humans were able to do this. I think, from my viewpoint, that humans were designed by God and made intelligent by God. I think it is perfectly conceivable that humans would then be able to extend their intelligence by building machines, just like they extend their strength. But it's interesting that if you come at it from an atheistic standpoint, what you're saying is that not only did human intelligence just stumble out of the dark somehow, but that there isn't sufficient intelligence anywhere else in the world that can make something like Watson that can mimic our intelligence, and I use the word in quotes, what it takes to get to something that can even mimic our intelligence is a concerted, lengthy, costly effort. And even then, what results, in my mind, is not actually intelligence. What results, I'm getting my mail, of which there is none, probably means my wife picked it up. What results is a fascinating tool that will probably lead to far more machine intelligent conversational helper type things over the course of the years to come. They did mention when they were talking to the scientist, I'm back into my garage. They did mention when talking to the scientist that one of their goals was to get to something like the computer on Star Trek, where you could just sit down and have a conversation with it, or more appropriately, give it instructions and make requests of information, and it would just give you that information without a lot of typing. And I see that as a logical progression of this, because, frankly, Watson was pretty amazing in terms of the stuff that it did get right with what it had to work with. So I see us still moving in that direction of getting computers that interface with us better, that can better supply us with the information that we request faster and more accurately. But Watson also revealed again how incredibly amazing human intelligence is in terms of being able to comprehend things to the point where we understand answers. We have this capability of taking in this wide variety of information and distilling it down and saying yes, no, yes, no, yes, no, yes, no. Because Watson, for all of his 2,800 computers, some of those answers that came up, they weren't even in the ballpark. Look at it, like, what? How in the world did it ever get that? Because there's still something missing. So that was one observation that I had. And then the other little smile that I had is, you know, after it was all said and done, yes, Watson did win. But it took a roomful, the equivalent of 2,800 computers, to best 3 pounds of goo that we carry around between our ears, that we do not understand how it really works yet. And that for all of our efforts, honestly, we aren't even close to reproducing what it can do. And I think that is a very cool and amazing thing. Maybe we'll have computers that will think someday. But you know, today is not that day because Watson proved over and over that really what he was just this giant interconnected index box, and there was something missing, and that something is still the mysterious component of the functioning human brain. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.